and welcome to Philosophy of X here on the Aspect Network. I'm your host, Alex Batts, and I'll be your guide as we take a journey to examine the world of X-Men through philosophy. As you can tell by the title for this episode, we're taking another break from our regularly scheduled programming, and this will now be a continued theme until X-Men 97's first season wraps up. While I did envision this podcast as an X-Men meets philosophy show, I just can't help talking about the current X-Men series that's airing right now. So, every 2 weeks, we'll be having an interlude episode wherein I dive into the latest two episodes from the animated show. For this week, that means that I'll be taking a look at the episodes 3 and 4, Fire Made Flesh, and Motendo / Life Death Part 1. This episode will be a little looser than typical Pox episodes, sort of. I have notes and a script, but I also want to allow myself some room for tangents and raw reactions. Unlike my reaction to the premiere, I won't be keeping this episode completely spoiler-free. So, consider this your spoiler warning for the episodes 3 and 4. If you have not watched them yet, I definitely recommend doing so before listening, or if you don't care about spoilers, then carry on. With that, let's get into my thoughts on Fire Made Flesh and Motendo / Life Death Part 1. So first up, we have episode 3, Fire Made Flesh, directed by Emi Unimura, written by Bo DeMeo and Charlie Feldman. Again, apologies for any mispronunciations. This episode is wild. It's adapting essentially the entire arc of Madeline Pryor, which took decades to get through in the comics, and has even just recently been really given closure as soon as a year or so ago. And this episode is doing it in under 30 minutes. It's moderately successful. It gets through the material for sure. It hits the main points. Madeline is a clone of Jean. The team isn't sure where or when they were switched by Mr. Sinister. Nathan is Maddie and Scott's son and not Jean's. Mr. Sinister is trying to create his perfect mutant by combining the Summers and Gray DNA and then infecting him with the techno-organic virus. Maddie becomes the Goblin Queen and baby Nathan gets sent into the future where he'll eventually become Cable. If that all sounds like a lot to cover in under 30 minutes of an animated show, that's because it is. As I said, the episode is moderately successful. It's a fun watch, for sure. The animation is unreal. The mansion warping into a nightmarish horror at the hands of Madeline Pryor is incredible to see, and the action in Limbo, which I don't believe is even referred to as Limbo in the episode, is stellar. The battle between Maddie and Magneto rocks. The moments of her transformation into the Goblin Queen are stunning. The psychic battle and resolution between Maddie and Jean is equal parts cathartic and mesmerizing, but it's all a bit rushed. If you aren't familiar with the story in the comics, you really don't have any context for any of this. The episode tells you the main points that you need to know, but you don't get any time to really live with any of these revelations. They just hit one after the other. Maddie calls herself the Goblin Queen because that's what she's called in the comics. The show doesn't give you any actual reasoning for it. The heartbreak of Maddie struggling for her own sense of identity after realizing that she's a clone of Jean is a bit lost when you don't have the lengthy amount of time that her, as her own person, and Scott spent together post Jean Grey's death in the comics. In this universe, there was never that separation of character. It's like a speedrun of Maddie's character arc, and you lose a lot there because her character arc is honestly one of the greatest in comics. The whole thing is just weird. Like I said, it's a fun watch, and I can't deny that I had a great time seeing the familiar beats hit, but it could have benefited greatly from more time. It's tough, because looking at the episode list for the rest of the season, I don't know what really could have been cut to make room for it, but this is definitely one of those arcs that would have benefited from being multiple parts. With that said, we're going to take a quick break and then move on to an episode that in itself is multiple parts, but also the beginning of a two-parter, Motendo and Life Death Part 1.
Hi, my name is Negan.
And I'm Bree. Enjoying this show on the Aspect Network?
Then check out Viltrumikes, an Invincible podcast.
Each week, we go back and discuss your favorite episodes of the series and review new episodes as they release right on Amazon Prime.
Join us as we travel space, time, and the multiverse with Mark Grayson and discuss one of the most exciting superhero series on TV on Viltrumikes, here on the Aspect Network.
And now, back to the show.
Welcome back. So episode 4, Matendo / Life Death Part 1, is directed by Chase Conley and written by Beau DeMeo and Charlie Feldman again. This episode is structured pretty weirdly. The first 15 or so minutes are devoted to the Matendo section, which follows Jubilee and Roberto Da Costa, aka Sunspot, though he doesn't have that codename yet, as they're sucked into a 16-bit video game, while the last 10 or so minutes are dedicated to Life Death Part 1, which follows Storm and Forge's budding romance and the attempts to return Storm's mutant abilities. Starting with Matendo, I absolutely adored this section. Admittedly, I've never been a huge Jubilee fan. It's not that I've disliked her, I've just been kind of indifferent. That's been changing lately though, thanks to recent outings in books like Exterminators, which you should absolutely pick up, it's a blast, and then now appearances like this. She rules and her powers are crazy cool. This section is propelled forward by it being Jubilee's 18th birthday and her wanting to celebrate in an arcade, but being shot down by Magneto, citing that she should be training instead. Side note, I find it incredibly weird anytime comic characters' direct ages are brought up now. It's something that used to happen a lot when these books were originally being published, but it's something that's gone by the wayside as time has gone on and creators realized it doesn't exactly gel with the serialized, never-ending format of comics. I believe there's actually a policy at Marvel currently to never really date anything happening in the present day with a year, or to say what birthday characters are celebrating if an issue does happen to be a birthday issue. Anyway, Jubilee and Roberto end up getting sucked into a video game world crafted by Mojo, an interdimensional alien who feeds on ratings. He's realized that reality TV is going by the wayside, and video games are the surest hit for him going forward. So, he conscripts Jubilee as the lead character and sends her on a variety of missions replaying some of the most iconic hits from the X-Men mythos. Also, side note, the Matendo pun is hilarious, it's really great, but yeah. It's campy, it's fun, it's littered with tons of references, and it again nails the line of being fan service that doesn't become pandering. Spiral shows up for real this time, not just as Morph turning into Spiral, which I geeked out on. There's a lot of great character development here as well for both Jubilee and Roberto, as Jubilee is faced with an older version of herself that emphasizes the importance of growing up and moving forward, rather being stuck in the familiarity of the past. The current relaunch of X-Men comics could actually be taking some notes here. Roberto gets some growth in being more accepting of his mutantdom and using his powers more, and the pair, of course, eventually break free and return to the real world, changed for the better by their experience. As is becoming the norm with this show, the animation rocks all the way through, with Jubilee's powers being exceptionally dazzling, and the video game effects are also super cool to see. The 16-bit sections are also just really fun. It's always a blast to see that kind of style appear in things. So that leaves us with then the beginning of Life Death, where we shift our focus to Storm and Forge in the desert. This section is much more low-key than the rest of the episode and really hinges on the sexual and romantic tension between Forge and Storm. Storm is still struggling with her loss of power and disconnect from nature, and being with Forge and surrounded by nature is certainly helping. Meanwhile, Forge continues tinkering away at a device to restore her powers. It's chill for the most part, and we learn more about Forge's backstory, and there's some really tender moments between the two. This portion of the episode suffers a bit from the same problem that plagued Fire Made Flesh, in that some developments feel a bit rushed because they're what needs to happen according to the story that it's adapting. Forge telling Storm that he loves her after they've shared a total of maybe 10 minutes of screen time just feels a bit weird, but it happens because in this arc in the comics they have a romance, so it has to happen here. It's not terrible, and it's sort of believable. I also would fall in love with Storm immediately, but it just doesn't quite land with the emotional impact that it could. And of course, there is some drama revealed that sends a fracture through their relationship and an even more dramatic cliffhanger that follows because this is a part one after all, so we'll get more into that next time. Overall, I really did enjoy these two episodes, even if they, I think, had a bit more problems than the first pair that we got in the two-part premiere. Overall, this series is definitely a huge plus. I'm geeking out constantly being an X-Men fan and really just love seeing a bunch of the, they're hitting the major like beats from the most iconic X-Men stories, and it's cool to see, even if some of it is a bit rushed. But yeah, that's episodes 3 and 4 of X-Men 97, and we'll dive into the next two episodes next time. Thanks so much for tuning into this interlude episode of Philosophy of X, and be sure to bring your metal detectors next week as we return to our discussion on the Master of Magnetism, Magneto, and the Ethics of Mutant Liberation. You can find me online at AP Batman with two T's, and please be sure to subscribe here to The Aspect on YouTube and any platform where podcasts can be found. Please give us a like, leave a comment, and turn on that notification bell so that you never miss an episode. You can also follow us on Twitter/X, Instagram, and TikTok at The Aspect Co. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.